everybody. Welcome to Steelers.com Live. I'm Missy Matthews, joined today by Bob Laureola and Mike Prasuta of the DBE Morning Show. Guys, it's kind of hard to believe as we're sitting here 2 days away from camp being done. Tomorrow's the last practice, and I feel like we've been here a while, but it has gone kind of quickly.
Dreams do come true, Missy. It is ending. Dreams do come true. That's all I have to say.
I don't know. I've had a fun 3 weeks. I could maybe do another. Ike Taylor, second in your "it went by quickly" motion yesterday. He did say he's going to miss the fellas when everybody moves back to the south side next week.
All right, well, let's talk about practice today. It is still going on behind us. Whenever it is over, we will go to Mike Tomlin live for his post-practice press conference. But a good sign after yesterday, Le'Veon Bell and Isaac Redman getting hurt and not finishing practice. They were out there again today.
Le'Veon Bell and Isaac Redman both in pads. As you can see, they didn't do everything. No contact work today, at least none that we saw until we came up the hill here. Individual drills, they took some precautions relative to their injuries. There was a lateral slide drill through cones that Le'Veon Bell did not participate in. He's been avoiding that one since he first suffered the bruised knee. Isaac Redman did not hit the blocking sled. And there's also a drill called pull and tug in which two running backs try to rip the ball out of the hands of a third. And Kirby Wilson, the running backs coach, was very adamant, yelling at the rest of the guys, don't tug red, don't tug red. You have a stinger, a shoulder issue, you don't need that. But I agree with you, Missy. Very encouraging to see those guys out there. Shows a little bit of esprit de corps and a little bit of want to. Making a little bit of a statement, even though they didn't take contact work, that they were going to try to bounce back as quickly as possible.
You know, and as an added insurance policy, the Steelers did make a roster move today. They added running back Jeremy Wright from Louisville and cut place kicker Daniel Ratman. Wright is 5'11", 205 pounds. He left Louisville a year early to enter the 2012 draft. However, he was not picked. He signed by the New York Football Giants on May 1st as an undrafted rookie, cut by that team on May 31st. Last year, he had 824 yards rushing, 41 catches for 11 total touchdowns. He's wearing number 37 in white out there right now. And when they were in those contact drills, Mike, he was hitting it up in there.
Yeah, he's getting a shot. You never know when your opportunity is going to arise, and he's taking advantage of his. One thing I wanted to add about Le'Veon Bell and Redman, guys, Le'Veon Bell was not favoring his knee whatsoever. He didn't have it wrapped when he was doing the individual stuff. He wasn't looking down and pulling at it. It wasn't distracting him. He was out there doing what he could do when he could do it. And he even hit Big Bertha today, as did Isaac Redman. Big Bertha, for the uninformed, is that huge bag that hangs from what looks like a kid's swing set, and they move it back and forth. There you get a good look at it. And there you see Jonathan Dwyer having a run at Big Bertha. They didn't run through it today, but they kind of punched it, working on the pass protection stuff, and both of those guys held up in that.
We talked to Le'Veon today at the lunchtime media period, and he said he doesn't know his status for Monday, but the injury isn't as serious as they think, and he does want to work through it these next 2 days to see if he can go on Monday.
I mean, I wasn't surprised I was hit. You know, I just kind of let off the gear a little too much. You know, it just fell awkwardly. I mean, it's something that usually happens all the time. I just don't fall on it, but when I fell, kind of fell awkwardly.
It's just an aggravation of the same injury. You just bruised it more. Basically.
That's all it was.
To kind of take it back to maybe where it was before earlier, is it
No, it's not as bad as it was. Okay. But it just took me back just a little bit. But I'll be able to work through it and hopefully get on the field Monday.
Guys, another positive sign today at practice was Cortez Allen. He wasn't wearing pads, but he had the jersey, and he was going through some individual drills, obviously not anything major, but the fact that he's making that leaps and bounds and going through that and also running sprints on the second field behind when everyone was doing some contact. So very good to see. We'll have to get an update from him hopefully tomorrow just to see how he's feeling and how close he is to maybe returning.
Yeah, usually it's an indication that he might return next week. You know, what I had heard immediately after the arthroscopic procedure he had on his knee was two preseason games, and then, you know, they'd take another look at it and see where they were. So, you know, the Steelers play the Redskins at FedEx Field Monday night. Players are off Tuesday. I would expect Cortez Allen to, give it a shot anyway on the fields on the south side next Wednesday.
couple other splash moments in practice today as well, the kind of stuff when a coach says a guy flashed. We had at least three of those moments by my account today. One of them on a punt return, and Marcus Wheaton, who seems to show up each and every day out here doing something that gets your attention, he settled under a punt return and headed to the sideline and turned it upfield. And while he was doing that, one of the assistant coaches, I think it was Jerry Olsavsky, was yelling at the coverage team, "He's really fast. Get over there. He's really fast." As if this was just being discovered by the Steelers. We also saw Jarvis Jones getting first team reps with the defense today. It was Jones and Lamar Woodley at outside linebacker. Jason World's either nursing an injury or getting a day off. Not sure which it is at this juncture, but Jarvis Jones had a great burst pass rush during 11-on-11 drill. He would have had a sack of Bruce Gradkowski if they allowed the quarterbacks to be tackled out there. And another moment made you kind of step back and go, look at that. A little swing pass from Gradkowski to LaRod Stevens-Howling, and three of the offensive linemen, Marquise Pouncey, Ramon Foster, and David DeCastro. Guys, they had to be 15 yards ahead of the play downfield. They were really prepping that stuff before 11-on-11 work today, working on the linemen, getting to the second level, setting up those flanker screens and those swing passes and all that stuff they're going to do with these young linemen that can move, Bob.
You know, and I was watching practice from up above, so I got to see the way that the three linemen came out. I mean, they were aligned properly. I mean, they weren't staggered. In other words, they were all running at the same speed, or at least, that's the way you want it to be. You want it to be almost like a wall as opposed to just, you know, staggered guys out there. And that's the way, LaRod Stevens-Howland gets in behind that. He's difficult to see, and he's extremely quick. I really think that can be a big part of this offense.
Sticking with offense, we heard from Ben Roethlisberger today at the lunchtime media period. And, guys, he talked a lot about how he feels in terms of his health, second year in the Todd Haley offense, and just with the whole new O-line. And he said we can't call them young guys because he feels like they're kind of vets now since they have a year or two, in some people's case, under their wing. So let's take a listen to Ben.
Yeah, I feel my arm feels a lot stronger. I get the ball down the field, better zip, even the receivers, coaches have said the same thing. So, to me, that's what was most important, was making sure that my arm stayed strong or got strong and stayed strong.
Then the last game, the average your passes went past the line of scrimmage was 5 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And even you threw a 20-yarder to Antonio. Is that a preview of things to come, or just how the game plan worked out?
That was intentional. That was game plan. We really wanted to, against a 4-3 type defense, we wanted to work on our screen games, our short underneath type passes. Even the one to Antonio was more of a conversion route. He wasn't supposed to go that deep, and it was a conversion type thing. So more game plan than anything. I still think that will be weapons for us, is throwing the short ball. But like I said, that particular game was more about just game planning.
So in general, the philosophy is the short stuff sets up the deep stuff.
Well, that's the hope, and running the ball sets up the play action, and that's a game of football. It's so many things set up other things, and that's why it's a game of chess between coordinators usually, and then the players have to execute it because, whether it's coverages, blitzes, you have to be prepared to make adjustments on the run and try and fool the other team.
And speaking with other quarterbacks that you may have talked to, or just whatever doctors and previous experience you've had, when you talk about your arm getting stronger as you're going into your 30s now, when do you think the peak strength is supposed to be for an NFL quarterback?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I guess it depends on how they work out, how their body is, if they're healthy. For me, it was just about, obviously with the injury last year to the shoulder, chest area, I wanted to get my arm strength up a little, get stronger. And so I did different things rather than lifting weights. I was out kayaking, doing things like that are kind of untraditional, what you would expect. But receivers and, like I said, coaches have said the velocity on my passes have gone up. So I guess that's a good thing.
Kayaking?
Yes.
Rotator cuff primarily?
Everything. Yeah. Have you ever done it?
Yeah, it hurts like hell.
There you go.
So do you guys want to go kayaking after this? Build some arm muscle?
That's okay.
Okay.
I'll stick with LA Fitness. Thanks. But it is interesting to hear Ben hold court as he does periodically in camp. One of the things we've seen out here, guys, is the dynamic that the Steelers outlined after the drafting of Landry Jones. That was kind of the signal that Charlie Batch and Byron Leftwich were not going to be back. The people in authority at the time said, we like the quarterbacks we have. And that made Ben Roethlisberger not just the starter, but the guy in terms of experience and leadership and the guy who knows what's going on in this offense. Todd Haley told me yesterday that Roethlisberger's, quote, in a really good place right now on top of his game. And Todd Haley thinks that Roethlisberger will have to stay on top of his game because when people, as Todd explained it to me, when people are asking you questions, it is paramount, that was Haley's word, paramount, that you give them the right answer because you're going to be depending on them to help you have individual success and to have the team have success. So it seems to be a role that Ben Roethlisberger likes. He's a double-digit years of experience guy now. He's not just the starter and the best quarterback on the team. He's becoming a leader, not just of the offense, but throughout the team. It's been fun to watch him out here this year as he kind of transitions into yet another phase of his career.
You know, before training camp opened, I asked Mike Tomlin, Ben is your franchise quarterback. What do you need from him at this training camp, you know, for the team to go on and have the kind of season you want to have? And he said that he thinks Ben has to be whatever he needs to be to each individual teammate. In other words, you know, Mike, you referred to the leadership, but how you do that can be a little bit different for every guy. And he said he talked to Ben a lot about that in the offseason, and he feels comfortable that Ben understands and embraces that role. So, yeah, I've seen a lot of these kinds of things too. Ben is, I don't know, for lack of a better phrase, he seems to be just extremely comfortable in his own skin.
Yeah, and we've seen that out here, Bob, and we've heard it. You hear him talking constantly to the wide receivers, talking with the running backs, the linemen, whoever's out there. It's appeared to me at times that he's been running some of those drills where they run fades to the corner against the cornerback or the post stuff. He's really involved. One of the things Randy Fickner, the quarterback's coach, told me was he's engaged not just when he's in the drill, but even when he's out of the drill. He's still bringing energy to the field and energy to the exercise, and those are all good things. The Steelers pretty happy with the camp that Ben Roethlisberger's had so far.
Let's move on to the offensive line. And Coach Tomlin has said it numerous times just in this training camp that there needs to be position flexibility, moving the tackles, just various things that he's done. We talked to Marquise Pouncey today about Calvin Beecham and the flexible player that he's become.
He's doing great, man. He plays all the positions. He's an accountable guy that the coaches really like, and I think he's really attacking it. You know, he's getting better each and every day. And center's a hard position, man, especially with the snaps. But he's grown since OTA, so it's going good for him.
Why do you think he's that guy that coaches are kind of emerging and putting into all these different positions to kind of be reliable everywhere?
Well, he's physically able to do it all. I mean, he's really good at everything, and he ain't the strongest guy, but he has leverage. He really knows how to work his technique, and it makes him good.
Guys, coaches seem to have a lot of confidence in Beecham, and just they really like his work ethic. I think everyone said that, and obviously his teammates too. Pouncey was echoing that. Bob, we'll start with you. What do you like so much about Beecham, and where do you think he fits into this new offensive line?
He's really smart, quick study, willing to learn and be coached. And what I observed today, Missy, was at just about every period, the first snap with the second team offensive line, Beecham was at center. And then after that, John Malecki would come over and take center, and Beecham would go out to right tackle, which is normally where he lines up with the second group. But Kelvin Beecham really can play all five positions. I would think that center would be his weakest, so to speak, at this point, simply because the difference for an offensive lineman, once you put the ball between your legs, is significant. There is obviously things that need to be done to protect the football, get it to the quarterback, whether it's the quarterback is right behind you or a shotgun snap. That's paramount. And some guys, you know, they concentrate too much on the ball and then they lose their man. That's a disaster. Or the other way around, that's a disaster. But Kelvin Beecham seems to be up to whatever challenge that the Steelers coaches have put in front of him. Because, as I said, he's a very smart guy, and he's willing to learn.
It kind of showed that last year. He sort of got thrust into a responsible role late in the season, having to make some starts at tackle and held up well. It wasn't too big for him. He was able to handle people such as Jabal Sheard of the Cleveland Browns, pretty experienced pass rusher, pretty good defensive lineman. And I think what we're seeing now from Kelvin Beachum is a reflection of not just his versatility, but a reflection that they still haven't found something that they have a lot of confidence in as far as a second-team offensive line. We see a lot of guys, Joe Long playing both sides tackle this week. DeAnthony Batiste is doing the same thing. They're still moving the pieces around and trying to find a unit that works. Jack McNeil Jr., the offensive line coach, said after the first preseason game against the New York Football Giants, the first offensive line handled the line of scrimmage. The second offensive line did not. That's where they are. That's what they got to work on.
You know, the other thing that they're looking at as well is, you know, game day, when you have to actually deactivate players, once you're into the regular season games, you keep seven offensive linemen dressed game day. That's it. That's your five starters and two other guys. And you really need those other two guys to be very, very versatile. You cannot really afford to have two guys behind your five who can only play guard or tackle or left side or right side. So what they're trying to do, I believe, is kind of groom Kelvin Beachum to be, you know, what is in basketball the sixth man, someone who can come off the bench and really fill in wherever the team might need him. To me, that, you know, that's such a valuable, valuable role, that sixth offensive lineman, especially if he's a guy like Kelvin Beachum who can play a bunch of positions.
Do either of you guys think that with Beachum still developing, obviously in his second year, and sometimes the uncertainty with Marcus Gilbert, can he stay healthy, is there a chance that Beachum could give Gilbert a run for the tackle position?
No. I don't think that if Marcus Gilbert remains healthy, he will be a starter. And if he's not, then it's a, you know, then Kelvin Beachum becomes you know, the reserve, versatile reserve that they're trying to groom him to be. I don't know that these five guys, the first five, the way they're looking right now, if they stay healthy, that's your, they're your best five. Kelvin Beachum is extremely versatile, and he is a very good guy to have on the team, the kind of guy that you have to have on your team if you want to compete through an entire NFL regular season. But those five guys that they have with the first group, they're the best five to me by far.
I agree with Bob.
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, I think that Marcus Gilbert's going to dictate that. If he plays well enough, he's going to play. Kelvin Beachum is not going to beat him out if Gilbert is doing what they want him to do. But with a lot of guys, if Marcus Gilbert slips below the line, what's that saying around here, Bob? The standard is what?
The standard.
Yeah, it's the standard. And if Marcus Gilbert fails to meet that standard, they're going to look at options. I think the center stuff is interesting because I think that maybe gives us a little peek into what they're thinking in terms of backup center, but they're not real sold on which way they want to go in that direction just yet.
Well, sticking with offensive linemen, Craig Wolfley, Tunch Ilgen Labs, I'll let you kind of explain this. We let them take a camera, go down on the field and do some drills. It got a little intense, but I think we're getting the point across with what they did.
Yeah, Tunch and Wolf spent a lot of time out on these fields during their playing career. And one of the drills that, you know, is one of the more interesting ones, I think, to watch for the fans is the individual pass rush, pass blocking drills. And we mic'd up those two guys. Tunch was playing the role of an offensive lineman. Craig Wolfley was playing the role of a defensive lineman. And they talked a little bit about what each guy is trying to do to the other during a rep of this drill.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Steelers.com Live. He's Wolf, and I am Tunch, and his old offensive lineman. In our day, Wolf, my favorite drill was the one-on-one pass blocking drill.
It was the highlight of the day because, you know, you get together one-on-one, and it's you and another guy, mano y mano, out in front of all your peers, right, and all the hooting and hollering commences, and who's the alpha male?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's very competitive, and you crank it up. The adrenaline is pumping.
No question. Just,
here's what the drill is. It's going to be one-on-one now. So I was the right tackle. Wolf is going to play the left defensive end or the outside linebacker. And what they'll do is they'll set a dummy up at about 7 yards back.
Right.
His job is to what?
I want to get there, and I want to cremate the dummy, by blowing past the offensive tackle.
Okay, so as I'm sitting here, I'm coming up, and I'm going to get in my stance, and at the snap of the ball, I am going to set. And what I'm trying to do, if you just remember your geometry, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. These guys are usually trying to get the edge on you and get to the dummy as quick as you can. So my job is to bisect that angle. So because I wasn't very good at geometry, but I was really good at shooting pool, I know that the angle here to bisect is right here. So I'm going to get to an what we used to call an inside crotch angle. My right leg outside lat is going to split his crotch, and then I'm going to have my hands up ready for contact.
Now, the first thing I want to do is a defensive outside linebacker, let's say like Lamar Woodley. I want to make sure I get enough spacing outside to make him have to move out. From this position, I got to react to him coming off the ball and then take my first steps as I come forward. And what I want to do is get in a position for a bull rush, because I'm Lamar Woodley. I want to put my forehead to his chin. I want to get my hands inside, and I want to climb the body. So what I want to do is get into a position where I'm here, I headbutt, and I start driving using a low under and up angle to get to him.
All right, my first thing is when he's coming into me, I want to come on in, I want to punch. But if I miss the punch and he gets the bull, now he's going to extend. The next thing I want to do, I want to trap the hands down. What I'm going to do is bring his head down, and then I'm going to slap him on the back of the head and try to drive him.
That wasn't nice.
I'm going to try to drop him. But the whole way, he's trying to get this lockout.
What I want to do is get the lockout now and continue the bull rush on him. Now, if we come back to here.
If we pull my shirt, man.
If we get to this position and I lead him with the hands, he traps my hands. What I've got to do now is I got to regain my balance and try to come off and throw an uppercut here. Now, he's going to counteract by using his angle and his hip, hand on the hip.
Well, see, what happens if he sinks it up high, I'm going to kidney punch right here. See, I've got my left hand.
Like he's doing right now.
His kidneys are exposed, and if I hook him to the kidney, the whole lower extremity releases, and you fall to the ground. Or what I might try to do is clamp down on this, get my hand on his throat, and pull him back this way. Now, if he's good, he's going to spin off this.
I would spin off this and try to gain ground. The other thing I would do, if I was here, I would take two hands, and I'd attempt to work his shoulder. Pull this down, that creates a lock on his shoulder. If I can maintain pressure by pulling down, I can get him to release.
I think something's wrong with his throat.
So I pull down, I get that corner here. Now, if he gets far enough away, he can still lock out, and that creates a problem for me.
The other move he'll do is if he sees me overset, what are you going to do, Wolf?
I'm going to club to the inside.
And
so I'm
going to
take one upfield here. I'm going to jump inside with the club. I'm going to hit him right there. Now, you want to make sure you hit him in the shoulder, because if I hit him in the head like that,
that's right.
That's a fall. Yeah.
So do that, and then a head slap over here, comes over here like this, right now.
Boom.
Then I want to punch the chest like that.
Now, from here, I want to uppercut to the waist.
Now, if he uppercuts to the inside, now I have the right hook to the kidneys. And as you can see, it's all hand-to-hand combat, and it is designed. We've kind of over-dramatize this, maybe. The goal is for him to get to the quarterback. The goal for me is to stop him. And the beauty of it is, if you ever watch one-on-one pass blocking here, there's a lot of energy. You hear a lot of coaching from John Mitchell, the defensive line coach, and then, of course, Jack McNeil Jr., the offensive line coach. And the guys, they do a lot of hooping and hollering.
Because you always want to be the top dog.
You know, and I asked them when they were done, I said, "Tunch, did you really ever punch anybody in the kidneys?" And he said, "Only the people I didn't like."
I'm glad they put it out there was a foul for something he was talking about, because hit him in the back of the neck, punch him in the kidney, grab him in the throat. That's okay. Just don't head slap him.
Yeah, you don't want to draw the flag.
No. And just as a disclaimer, do not try that at home. Do not say you learned it from Steelers.com Live. That was Tunch and Wolf. But
that was priceless.
Anyways, we have another great segment that we want to get to. Everybody knows that Rod Woodson is here at training camp helping out Carnell Lake and the defensive backs, and also here with Coach LeBeau, which is great to see those three together again. So we finally had a chance to get them together to see what it's like to be back here at St. Vincent College.
I remember what great players they were, and I remember how smart I was when I had those two guys playing for me.
It's a familiar sight for Steelers fans, Carnell Lake and Rod Woodson together again on a football field, but this time as coaches. Woodson is back as a coaching intern, helping Lake and defensive coordinator Dick LeBeau.
Carnell and I played together for 8 years, and I haven't seen Dick in quite a while, so being back in that room brings back some old memories.
A lot of the things that I learned as defensive back was from watching Rod. So this has been, it's almost been like a little bit of deja vu, a little bit, to see guys take Rod's information, use it on the field, and get better.
Woodson remembers when the Steelers drafted Lake, an outside linebacker from UCLA.
And, you know, when he came in, he was running all over the place, and, you know, it was refreshing to see the talent that he had. And thinking he was a linebacker, he was moving to safety, coming to the pros, and he played so well, even his first year. And then just how versatile he was as a player, not his first year, but as years went on, he played free, strong, nickel, dime, corner. He was kind of whatever, the jack of all trades, whatever they needed him to do, he did. And it's very rare that you'll find a player that can come through the league that can play those multiple positions, but play them well.
I didn't know defensive back, and I was searching for someone who could show me on the field, you know, how to play it and how to play it well. And I've been blessed because I didn't know it at the time, but I was watching and learning from Rod, who wound up going, you know, to the Hall of Fame. So you know, a lot of the things that I've learned, I emulated from watching Rod.
One thing the two became very good at together was stopping the Houston Oilers' run and shoot.
It required a lot of work between Rod and I, because we were the nickel and dime back, and we had to communicate a lot. And I didn't know a lot of things, and I just needed to focus on certain things. And Rod said, if you're going to be good, man, we got to communicate. So.
And it probably didn't hurt that LeBeau was their coach at the time, a coach who Lake and Woodson say let his players play their own game.
And he really allowed it when we played the run and shoot. If we saw something, we could play it. And he wouldn't belittle us when we came to the sideline and maybe made a mistake. So I think, you know, just playing year in and year out, twice a year, you know, we had our little techniques with it, and it worked well. I can't remember all of them. But, you know, our communication skills got better as we kept playing.
Now all three are together again at Steelers training camp in different roles, but Lake and Woodson are still learning from Coach LeBeau.
Yeah, I already knew he knew a lot, but coming back here this time and hearing talk on the coach's side of it, his knowledge is more than I thought it was.
I think he's kind of a savant of football a little bit, and not only that, coaching with him on a day-to-day basis, I get to know a side of LeBeau that players don't necessarily get to know. And that's kind of refreshing, and it's interesting. And he's a funny, funny guy as well.
It's a tremendous blessing for our young players to have those two guys working with them at the same time. I mean, it's a win-win situation for us. But for me, I just let the time machine go back a little bit, and it takes me back to when I was coaching those guys, and it's been an absolute joy to have them both together.
Bring back just a few memories?
Definitely does. I mean, and I'll tell you what, Missy, the run and shoot truly was driven out of the league by Dick LeBeau's deploying Rod Woodson and Carnell Lake over the two slot receivers. In the run and shoot, the slot receivers were just outside the tackles. And so LeBeau put those two guys there, and they had the athletic ability to run around and cover those little smurf receivers, but they were also about four steps from the quarterback. And I think if you would show that video to Warren Moon, a chill would run down his spine. In 1992, Bill Cowher's first year as the Steelers coach, the Steelers played the Oilers, the defending division champions, at Three River Stadium after upsetting them in the opener in the Astrodome. And Rod Woodson took out Warren Moon on one of those blitzes, turned it into the chuck and
duck. All right, Bob, we're going to break in right now. Coach Tomlin is about to speak to the media.
I thought that was a really positive day. You know, dog days of summer, as you know. But I thought the guys just embraced the challenge of coming up and getting up for practice. I thought the competition was legitimate, and as was the effort. It's good to see this time of year. We'll come out here tomorrow and kind of start our preparation for Washington. But another good day here in Latrobe for our guys. On the injury front, the two guys that went down to yesterday's practice, Isaac Redman and Le'Veon Bell, were partial participants today. We'll continue to march those guys back, hopefully toward participation, but we'll simply take it day to day. All other injuries are kind of status quo. The guys that are coming back are continuing to do so with no adverse effects. Questions?
Good to see 26 back after
the injury yesterday?
Question?
Is it a sign of his toughness? Do you appreciate that?
You know, he got a clean bill of health, so it's time to get back out here and start the process of readying himself for the game like all other healthy men.
All right.
Thanks,
Coach.
Thank you, guys.
Only the quickest Mike Tomlin post-practice press conference. We didn't time it, but 30 seconds, maybe?
It didn't need to be that long. those guys back out there, though.
Basically, just to recap, the only thing he said, Isaac Redman and Le'Veon Bell, partial participants, as we said at the top of the show.
And as Mike Tomlin said early, in one of these early post-practice press briefings, he was asked about Mike Adams and if he was going to give him any a special dispensation, so to speak, because of the incident that had happened back in Pittsburgh, I think it was in June, when he got stabbed. And Mike Tomlin said, I'm not a sentimental guy. Well, you saw the unsentimental Mike Tomlin right there.
And there is no extra credit.
There is no extra credit. No, there is not.
Can you just chime in on that feature you did on the two defensive backs we get out of here?
Yes.
Because it was exceptionally well done, number one. But number two, Dick LeBeau talked about the memories being jogged in labs. You and I have been doing this a long time. I started in late in the 1986 season. Ron Woodson's the best player I ever saw play for the Steelers while I've been covering them. And Carnell Lake, I think, is the most underrated or underappreciated. Had he been on a Super Bowl team here, he would probably get his just reward and be remembered the way he should be remembered. That guy was a phenomenal player. What he did in 1995, moving from safety to corner, and then the team gets to the Super Bowl, it's just remarkable.
I really think that Carnell Lake was Troy Polamalu before Troy Polamalu came here. And if there is no Carnell Lake, I don't know that Troy's evolution would have been the same. I think that, you know, Dick LeBeau kind of got used to a safety who could do a lot of different things, attack the backfield, run with receivers, kind of play all over the place. And I won't say Carnell Lake made Troy what he is, but I think it put the thought in Dick LeBeau's mind that, you know, if you have a unique talent at that position, you don't have to keep him in a box.
Well, it's actually funny you say that. Obviously, we weren't able to show everybody the entire interview that we had a chance to do with Rod and Carnell together, which was just great to do it at the same time with them. But one of the first things Rod said was, without Dick LeBeau, there would never be a special player like Troy Polamalu. And they kept preaching how much Coach LeBeau lets each player play their own game, and that's why things work, and that's why his defense has been so successful for so many years.
Yeah, and all you got to be is world class, and he'll let you pretty much do what you want.
But a lot of times, coaches still, even if you are world class and you show yourself to be, they still want you to do what they tell you. You know, Dick LeBeau was a great player himself, a Hall of Fame player himself. And he understands that, you know, sometimes it doesn't always have to go according to the script that the coaches write. You can let great players be great. And, you know, I remember Dick LeBeau started that piece by saying about how they made him look so smart. There was a training camp where both of those guys were unsigned when camp opened. And that was back in the day, you know, where telephones had to be wired into the wall. And so practice had started, and the players and coaches didn't know that soon after practice began, both the Steelers came to terms with both Lake and Woodson. And after practice, I was walking up the hill with Dick LeBeau, and I gave him the news, which he hadn't heard yet. And he laughed and said, Bobby, I just became a whole lot smarter of a coach.
All right, well, that will do it for us today here on Steelers.com Live. For Bob and Mike, I'm Missy. We'll join you tomorrow at 5 for our last show from training camp. We'll see you then.
Kayaking. Is that how you do it?
Both sides.
Both sides, yeah.
Good night.